Back here on Sharp Money as we keep it moving. Hour one here. Joe Cirillo in for Patrick Maher all week alongside Dustin Sweetelson. And as promised, we're going to take it to the Progressive guest line and welcome in one of my favorite people, former NFL quarterback for a dozen years, currently killing it over at ESPN, Dan Orlovsky. Dan, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good, bud. How are you doing, man?
I'm great. It's great to have you back on, man. This is a nice little full circle moment from my college radio show, 6 years ago already, now to the big leagues. It's great to have you on. And I want to talk about a kid that I think you and I both love. Now, year two, his team is playing tonight, Dan. It's CJ Stroud. I've been getting a hard time from a lot of people because I don't see Houston taking a step back this year. I know the schedule is tougher. I know there's film on Stroud and company now, but I think the Texans are primed for a real run. What's your outlook for CJ and the Texans in year two?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I've said all offseason that I think the Texans are trying to become the Bengals from a couple of years ago, where very early on they were like, oh, we got one. And not just a good player. We got a guy that, you know, can take us to the Super Bowl and win one. And that's why you saw the offseason that they had. You know, and I've said that the success of CJ and this team and offense last year was a little bit of a mirage because he was so good, but even better on third downs. And they weren't good offensively on first down, ran the football not productively. And it really put him in bad situations. And he was still that good. And so if they're able to just be a little bit better on those early downs, because you're just not going to survive in the NFL. I don't care how good you are. You know, he's 3rd and 7+. Oh, great. Our quarterback was 7 of 10 on third down. We win. So you're not going to survive in the league like that. So if they could be a little bit better on early downs, I think he and that offense will be even better. And, you know, the additions that they made onto their defense, you know, Danielle Hunter led the NFL in negative plays last year. So Stingley could be one of the best cover corners that we have in the league. So respectfully, the schedule being difficult, this team is very similar to what the Bengals were when they went to the Super Bowl against the Los Angeles Rams.
Dan, I have to ask you about the mentality because you've been in these locker rooms. You've lived the life of preparing for all these games. And my concern with Houston, because I love everything they've done, everything you listed, I think they're one of the most exciting teams we've seen in a while in the NFL. But you know how these defensive coordinators are. They're psychopaths. They sit there all offseason dissecting the film. How do you expect Houston to be attacked by defense this year? And how do you expect Bobby Slowick to kind of counter that?
Yeah, so it's a great question. I think there's two things that helps Houston in this situation. So Bobby Slowick comes from San Francisco under Kyle Shanahan. So that tree, a couple of things. One, that scheme that came from his father, Mike Shanahan, and Gary Kubiak, and then Kyle and Sean McVay, it's been around the NFL for 50 years. And it's not the scheme schematically that is, I guess, quote unquote, difficult to defend. They're not reinventing football plays. It is the way that scheme is so attached to every play in the playbook. And it's really the great illusion of, are you running it? Are you play action? Is it quick game? Is it a screen? Everything looks the same. And that has been the case for 40 or 50 years when you're good at it. Slowick is. And so that keeps defenses very hesitant and on their heels. The second thing is, you have to be diversified on offense, both in people and what those people can do to keep defensive coordinators from really being able to know your tendencies and pick up on some of the things that give them matchup advantages. So that's why I like Houston's offensive skill set is you're talking Dalton Schultz and Brevin Jordan at tight end, two different players, but they're athletic. They can work the middle of the field. But what tight end do you want to treat as a blocker? What tight end do you want to treat as a pass catcher? Nico Collins has become a real number one wide receiver that you better have somebody that can play man-to-man against them. And then Stephon Diggs is the guy that can work in the zones and really be a high-volume pass-catching guy. Tank Dell is the vertical threat. And so you have all these different pieces that really thrive in very specific roles that you have to be able to handle when it comes to the personnel that you match up with. And you don't necessarily – you can't cover everyone type of thing. So – I think the scheme with the way that it's kind of connected and then the people, you know, really kind of counters some of the philosophy behind getting the information on the quarterback.
He's Dan Orlovsky from ESPN joining us now on the Progressive guest line. Dan, you put out a tweet this morning about Jared Goff. And you noted that he has led four top five offenses in the past 7 seasons. This is a guy who I think continuously gets disrespected. I made my pick official, putting in a bet on him at 27-1 2 weeks ago to be the MVP this upcoming season. That's how much I believe in Goff, how much I believe in the Lions. Why can he finally break the narrative and win the MVP this year?
Because their offense is going to be just as good, if not better. You know, I mean, the addition of Jameson Williams, having the offseason, the draft pick 2 years ago in the first round out of Bama that's been hurt and suspended, him having a full offseason and how fast he is. I mean, his offense is fantastic. If Jared Goff was drafted by the Lions, he would have won MVP. And their offense, the way that he's performed, I mean, just since his last 2 years in Detroit, they have 109 touchdowns as an offense and they have 109 punts. That's not normal. That is astronomical. And, you know, I just think that he has performed at such a highly consistent level. I love the vet on him. He's obviously going to have to overcome some other names that are attached to that award or expectations of it. So the way they can run it, the way that he operates their play action game, the different pieces that they have, I think they're going to win the NFC. So you got to be a really good quarterback on the winning team to win that award. I think he'll be right in that conversation.
Dan, let's stay in that division, the Green Bay Packers, a guy that I know you were around in your playing days in Matt LaFleur. I don't know anything about play calling. I don't know anything about breaking down film, but I can tell you this. What I saw from him and his offense was some of the most inspired offensive play calling I've seen in a while. What is it that he does that is special, and how is it able to be repeated this year?
Yeah, I think the thing that Matt does is, like, he takes a bunch of different, you know, schemes that he's been a part of that generated from the same thing. I mean, it's a little bit what I was speaking about with the Shanahan tree. Like, he's been a part of Kyle Shanahan. He's been a part of Gary Kubiak. He's been a part of Sean McVay. And those all those guys run very similar systems, but he puts his own spin on it. Now, a little bit was the Green Bay personnel with, you know, a bunch of young receivers that have, you know, speed and two backs that are really good out of the backfield catching the football. I think his RPO game is fantastic, both in the horizontal RPO, meaning, you know, you get RPOs that are switched sides on the sideline and some are down the field, the vertical RPOs. So there's a lot of it that can be repeated. I think the best thing that he did last year was commit to protecting Jordan Love. You know, like, a lot of times teams want to run certain pass concepts, but they don't really, you know, Matt always starts with, can we block these people we're playing against? If we can, okay, what different plays can we get to? If we can't, can we change the protection or put more people to the protection to make sure we can? And if so, how? And I think that's the thing that really stood out and was really important last year. And he's always going to believe in that. Like, you got to block the play first, you know, and if you can't block the play, don't call it. And so I think that's a consistent theme. I think that's very repeatable for him. And they're loaded on offense too. I mean, they got 4 or 5 receivers that can go, 2 young tight ends, addition of Jacobs. So that offense will be very dynamic, just as it was the last half of the season.
Dan, I'm glad we're sticking in this division because I want to look at the Minnesota Vikings quarterback room quickly. Kevin O'Connell, considered by a lot of people to be sort of a QB whisperer. What do you make of their quarterback room? What can he get out of Sam Darnold that maybe other coaches in the past haven't given Darnold the opportunity to achieve? And what kind of concerns do you have about J.J. McCarthy? What's your outlook for him as a pro?
Yeah, I mean, what Kevin can give Sam is a chance. Sam's never had a chance. I mean, he's never had really a good play caller, and he's never had good people around him. You know, this is by far the best situation he's ever been in. You know, he did play in San Francisco last year, but outside of mop-up duty. So, you know, one of the 6 or 7 best offensive lines, obviously a trio of wide receivers that are high-end, big-time tight end and Hawk, and a back and Aaron Jones from Green Bay. So, like, you've got a ton of talent around them. It's very similar to the scheme that we've talked about a couple of times with that Shanahan tree. So, you know, Kevin's one of the best play callers when it comes to marrying things in the league. So it's really any quarterback I have really high expectations to go and play well in there. I think it'll be Sam. You know, I would expect him to be their starter, but I'm high on JJ. I have been. I was probably a little bit in the minority on that. My concern with JJ is this. JJ is a great kid, and he's one of those people that at that position, he's a pleaser. He wants to do everything the right way. Coach me up. Trevor Lawrence is like this as well. and they become so married to doing things the way that the paper or the playbook tell you to do it, that you lose a, you get stuck on that, and that kind of minimizes some instinctual plays. And so you got to find the balance if you're JJ of like, hey, I'm really committed to doing it that way. But then there's got to be that athletic instinct that kicks in sometimes that maybe forces or allows for some of the misses that were part of his game in college to not be there. Because I think some of the misses in college were like, oh, my gosh, I have to throw this ball on my back right leg, one hitch, and I'm like, and he just gets stuck in it, forces some misses. And I think once he gets rid of that and a comfort level, he's going to be a really good player.
Dan, incredible stuff. Thank you so much for the time. Guys, don't go anywhere. Sharp Money rolls on after this. Who will win the Heisman Trophy? Who will be in the college football playoff Final Four? Which teams will surprise and which will disappoint? All of those questions and more can be answered by downloading the newly released 2024 VSiN College Football Betting Guide. Detailed team previews, picks, and best bets from our writers, hosts, and personalities are just a few clicks away by becoming a VSiN Pro subscriber. Not only will you get the College Football Betting Guide, but also our NFL Betting Guide and an all-access pass to daily best bets and full access to our exclusive betting splits. Check out the current offers right now at VSiN.com/subscribe. That's VSiN.com/subscribe as Sharp Money moves along here on this Thursday, August 1st edition. Joe Cirillo in for Patrick Maher all week alongside Dustin Sweetelson. Dustin, that was fun stuff with Sean right there.
Yeah, look, the college football, like that to me, if you told me give up my Saturdays or Sundays, Joe, I will give you the NFL. I will give you your Sundays. To me,
really?
The 9 a.m. until like 9, 10 p.m. of just being locked in. All these random teams have a chance on any given Saturday. Where in the NFL, you pretty much kind of know who the contenders are. I love the chaos of college football. I love how many games there are. Everything about my Saturdays, I would sacrifice Sundays for Saturdays every time.
That's a hot take. That is a bold statement. I can't say I agree with that one. I love college football. Like you said, I love the chaos, the parity. There's more of that in college sports than pro sports, of course. I always say, look, you can't rely on an 18-year-old to show up to class in the morning. How the hell can you rely on them to cover a spread? But at the end of the day, no, I still will take the NFL and that product over college football. When it comes to hoops, I agree with you. College basketball is 86.
You're a psycho.
You like the NBA more?
I think you're a psychopath that you're able to keep up with college basketball. I don't know where you find the time because there are so many more college basketball teams and there's even more movement in the portal. It has been a full-time job. Half my vacation was spent figuring out who went where in college football, and I still didn't know Willie Fritz went to Houston.
I mean, the NBA, though, is so boring. College hoops, even though it's become with the transfer portal and with NIL increasingly more difficult to handicap, it's way more exciting.
What I would tell – so college hoops is harder to keep up with. From a betting perspective, it's 100% better to bet the sides and totals in college basketball. I like doing that a lot more. I don't bet sides in NBA. I only bet player props. My whole mindset for that is everyone said that players resting load management is an issue. I said, let's turn it into a positive. Figure out when a player is out, who in that lineup benefits from that player being out, or even someone from the other team who benefits from a star being out, right? Because they're not defending them. That's the only way you can bet the NBA. But college basketball to me is just so hard to keep up with.
It is. And that's why it takes a little bit of time. I don't go, you know, I'll play, you know, small numbers in November, December. I don't get serious about betting college hoops really until January, until conference play rolls around, because you don't know any of these teams' identity until January because of all that movement in the offseason and the transfer portal. So football keeps me busy until January. Like I said, you know, I'll play around with a 38.5 number when you're getting the U.S. South Sudan spreads in non-conference college hoops action. But you don't really learn about those teams that much in the offseason. You have to watch them for a couple months before you actually know enough to be what I deem an intelligent bettor. Unless college hoops is your number one specialty, where for me it's like it comes in at third behind the MLB and the NFL. If college hoops is your number one thing and you're just devoting the entire summer to studying who moved where, who's in what system now and who's going to, then maybe you have an edge in November. Because like you said, I mean, November college hoops, that's what keeps a lot of odds makers up at night.
And it's funny, in college basketball, I can't find the advantages there because there's just so much unknown. However, up until the transfer portal year, although last year I had a really strong week zero through weeks four is when I do my damage in college football. There's something about the out-of-conference play, these teams not being familiar with each other, a bunch of neutral site options, right? And I think somehow that unknown, I feel like I do have an edge. And I'm more willing, obviously, to back dogs most of the time. But even then, I think a lot of dogs are undervalued. For instance, I do think week zero, August 24th, Florida State and Georgia Tech, I think Georgia Tech catching 13 points at home is kind of disrespectful. I'm all over the Yellow Jackets in that one. I don't understand the fascination with Florida State mixing in so many new pieces. And people thinking DJ Uiagalelei is – somehow I messed up his first name, not his last name. DJ Uiagalelei is like a winning quarterback. I've watched him every step of the way. His best performance was when he filled in against Notre Dame his freshman year. And ever since then, he's had deer in the headlights, overthinking every play, does not contend with good teams. And I think that Georgia Tech's got something brewing. I loved them last year. They had a lot of fight. They were a scrappy team. And if they ever really recruit Atlanta well, get those three stars and four stars that miss out on going to Georgia and Alabama and all those places, take what's left over, they will win in Atlanta.
Yeah, Georgia is just such a tough place to recruit because, I mean, they've got some of the best talent in the country, and it seems like every SEC team wants those kids on their squad. That was a great pronunciation, by the way. You gotta help me out before I leave for Hawaii next week with Human Numen Akapua, the fish.
So this,
forgetting Sarah
Marshall. Oh, it's one of my favorite movies of all time. The problem with this is DJ Uiagalelei. It has taken me 5 years of him in college to figure out how to say it. Don't ask me to say the Tennessee quarterback. It's going to take a long time to get that right.
You know, it's funny. So you mentioned that Georgia Tech number. First off, I agree with you 1,000%. Obviously, it's early. I don't have any plays in yet on it. But catching 13 at home. Do people forget the kind of offense that Georgia Tech runs, the triple option? That offense's specialty is clock management, killing time. It's tough to get blown out for this Georgia Tech team. Even if you don't think they're going to win, they're in more games than other teams because their drives take so much time off the clock. So I like that early edge there with Georgia Tech at UW.
Well, they actually transitioned last year. So they run the spread now because Paul Johnson's gone. And Haynes King, quarterback, comes over from Texas A&M. Brent Key, third year there, took over mid-year for Paul Johnson 2 years ago. And they can open it up a little bit now. They're kind of getting the players in place that they need to run that system. And I do think they have a puncher's chance against Florida State week zero.
Yeah, I'm definitely not as high on Florida State or Clemson, really, as others. I think that your Canes are really live.
Which scares me.
That the public is in on Miami? That scares you, yeah.
Yeah, that the expectations. Yeah, we'll talk with Mitch Moss in about an hour about this. So I'll lay this out why we're having Mitch on, aside from being, you know, the lead host of our number one show on the network, Follow the Money, weekday 7 to 10 a.m. Eastern. But so I produced Follow the Money for 2.5 years. Me and Mitch got really close. When Mario Cristobal was having his opening press conference as Miami head coach, I was very excited. Because Mario Cristobal is a great recruiter. And I watched other schools take a Florida State come in and grab Dalvin Cook. Lamar Jackson and Teddy Bridgewater go from Miami high schools to Louisville, right? Guys like Amari Cooper go to Alabama when they're all from Miami. Why are the skill guys going to other schools and not coming to Miami? I was excited that Cristobal would be able to recruit the region because he's a former player, but he's also been known as a great recruiter. And Mitch, who we were on a road trip to Connecticut while the press conference was happening. I said, I got to go back to my room and watch the press conference. He was like, why are you so excited? The guy stinks as a head coach. And to be fair to Mitch, every step of the way since then, he's right. Mario Cristobal is a horrific in-game head coach. Single-handedly lost the game to Georgia Tech last year, put the season up in flames. And the reason we're having Mitch on, Mitch picked Miami to win the ACC. So that just goes to show you that even Mario Cristobal can't screw up the riches that he has recruited to this year's Hurricane squad.
Well, that just that has to show you how much of an impact that Cam Ward has on a lot of people's now favorable view of Miami. If they do pull that off, Say Miami turns in a 12-1 season. They win the ACC. They're going to the playoff. How live is Cam Ward at, what is he, 22-1 to win the Heisman?
So he's not one of the three Heisman best bets that I have in the all-new VEASAN College Football Betting Guide, but he will be someone I have in pocket. I'm also going to take a little flyer on Damian Martinez at like 150, 175-1. The odds of running back winning it are very slim, but at that number, I do think he's a game changer there. But you are right. If Miami somehow does this, if they win the ACC, they are playoff bound. The assumption would be that Cam Ward had a monster year, right? So yeah, with that, he will be in the mix, and that number is very much live. I love that he's down there. He is the most accomplished college football quarterback playing in 2024. Over 13,000 passing yards in his career.
Oh, I love this kid. I think he's really live to be the number one pick in next year's NFL draft. I think that he has serious pro potential. You know, he hasn't been on great teams, right? Obviously, he was Incarnate Word. I mean, they were like a 10-11 win team at the FCS ranks when he was there. But he went from the FCS to Washington State, overperformed, I believe, with Washington State. They didn't play much defense. They didn't have much around him. No one in the Pac-12 played much defense. I think he is a real pro-style quarterback. And you see it oftentimes in college, Dustin, where, you know, you'll get these dual threat college-y type quarterbacks who maybe that success can't translate to the NFL. I think Cam Ward can have a lot of success this year in Miami and then go on to have a really illustrious pro career as well. I could not be higher on this kid.
Which scares me. It all scares me, man. I don't like the expectations on a guy who's crumbled under pressure in Mario Cristobal.
The expectations are there. And you know who else is there? JVT joining us up next on Sharp Money. Sharp Money moves along here on this Thursday, August 1st. Final half hour of the show coming at you. I'm Joe Cirillo in for Patrick Maher all week alongside Dustin Sweetelson. And Dustin, you know, as we talk about the release of our 2024 college football betting guide today, a lot of in-house guest spots and interviews, man. I'm excited for this one. My first time talking to him. So let's hit the progressive guest line and welcome in from Follow the Money, our show weekdays 7 to 10 a.m. Eastern, Mitch Moss. Mitch, how you doing, man?
Fellas, happy to be on the show. Thanks for asking me.
Yeah, it's great. Great to have you. And, you know, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask Mitch Moss about Miller Moss. So we've been having so much Heisman discussion on this show today. Let's jump in with one of your long shot tickets. You got a little action on Miller Moss out there at USC?
Yeah, and I promise it's not because he's my third cousin, which he technically isn't, but I like to say it on the air anyway. Look, this was only... And I think you can have like a really long discussion on betting the Heisman this year because of the new landscape of college football. All these teams are playing each other and how many guys you can make a case for. And I'm not betting, hell, we don't even know if like Miller Moss is going to be the full-time starting quarterback for this team throughout the season because of what they did in the off season. But you know, I'm not going to take him at 20 or 25-1. There was a book in town recently, the Westgate, that had 60-1 on him. So I thought, okay, well, when you go back and look at the history of quarterbacks under Lincoln Riley as the head coach and what they have done and where they have finished in Heisman voting, it's impossible to ignore what they have done. I mean, in his first year ever as the head coach at Oklahoma, Baker Mayfield won the award. The year after that, Kyler Murray won the award. The year after that, if it wasn't for Joe Burrow's unbelievable season, Jalen Hurts could have won it because he finished second. And then you had the pandemic year, some weirdness with Spencer Rattler. He, you know, left during that Texas game. Caleb Williams came in that game, set the world on fire. Then he transferred to USC with Riley. He won it year number one. So he's had three quarterbacks win the award, and Mason Miller at 60-1. You know, if they happen to pull off a couple of these wins early on in September, could be looking at like 15-20-1 at that point, maybe even a little bit lower than that. He's going to put up great numbers if he's the guy. The question is, can the defense be good enough to win them enough games? So at that number, to me, I had to make that bet.
But Mitch, even if the defense isn't good and they're bad again, there's more shootouts and opportunities to put up bigger numbers for him. So look, I can't argue if anyone has conviction in the Heisman market this year with all the chaos that's about to ensue with the 12-team playoff, with these different kind of schedules where it's no longer the mentality of one loss and the season's over. I think we're opening ourselves up for a lot more guys to be in the mix. And you're talking about Moss coming back to USC. Continuity matters to me. Look at the three finalists last year. Jaden Daniels, 4-year starter, 2 years at LSU. Michael Penix Jr., 2 years at Washington. Bo Nix, 2 years at Oregon, which is why your other bet in the Heisman for Jalen Milroe intrigues me, because he's now a multi-year starter down there in Tuscaloosa.
It's a good point. So coming back, some continuity there for sure. They would rank up there with the stability rankings in terms of him being back and some other plays as well. And, you know, again, going back to Daniels for a second, LSU lost 3 games last year. So a team can lose, miss the playoffs in previous years anyway, and still have a chance for their best player to win the award. And with Milroe, you know, last year it was a total roller coaster because he did not play well in that second week against Texas, the one in which the Longhorns went to Alabama and then won the game. And it was very impressive by Texas in that spot. He did not even play the week after that. He was benched. Came back, and everybody said, uh-oh, this kid is not going to be the guy for Nick Saban. Well, what happened? They're like a fluky loss away against Michigan, in my opinion, of playing Washington for the entire thing last year, and a lot of it was because of this guy. And if you look at from the game where he came back after Texas to the game against Georgia in the SEC title game, 18 touchdowns in the air. He ran for 10 more. Saban, to me, best coach college football history. However, Kalen DeBoer, unbelievable last 2 years and a great offensive mind with Michael Penix. So now you have that combo going. And again, I'll bring this up because all these teams play with each other. I'm from Wisconsin. The Badgers are not going to beat Alabama when they host in Madison. I would love it if they would. As a fan, they're not going to beat them. So I would anticipate Alabama going to Wisconsin, winning that game. And then they have a bye week and a rematch against Georgia at home. What's Milroe to win the Heisman if he plays well in their 4-0 with 2 wins over Wisconsin and Georgia? He's not. He's going to be like 3-1 maybe.
Yeah, and oh, by the way, I think he's a more talented quarterback than Michael Penix Jr. So you have that going for you as well. I love the play. One of the main reasons why we brought you on here, Mitch, is because I went through everyone's picks in the college football betting guide that was released today at VSiN.com, and I saw that you had Miami winning the ACC. And I want to take you back to a few years ago. You and me, Pauly Howard, follow the money on the road, Foxwoods Casino. I say, hey, guys, I have to go upstairs. Mario Cristobal's having his first press conference as Miami head coach, and I'm fired up. And you said, the guy can recruit, but he can't coach. Why are you so excited? And I have to tell you, to this point, you have been correct. He has lost games on the margins for this team. But what they've done recruiting-wise has been insane. So for you to go and pick this team, knowing how you feel about Cristobal as a head coach, I think that speaks volumes, and I wanted you to elaborate on the bet.
Okay, so there's a lot in play here. And quite honestly, a couple of our guests this week really put me over the edge on Miami anyway, because I was a little ambivalent. I mean, I didn't know what I was going to do with the ACC, specifically with the guide coming out today. We had to have our picks in. You know, I wanted to get mine in a couple of weeks back. And, you know, when we consider everything that Florida State lost and Clemson, and I actually, if I don't like a coach in the country, maybe even at a, you know, I'll say this, if I had to rank them, who would I have as the better coach? And actually, I might have Cristobal overall, top to bottom, 365 days a year better than Dabo Sweeney.
Wow.
That guy, to me, is completely lost. Not embracing the transfer portal, that kind of a deal. Just no thank you. You can have him. And when you look, so that those are two big question marks. This is not the Clemson ACC, and you could argue that no other team in college football really has fallen off like Clemson has in recent years because they were it. They surpassed Alabama as like the best program in the country, and it lasted for like 15 minutes. That is no longer the case. And when you just break down the talent, and despite me having those thoughts about Mario Cristobal, and how could you ever forget what happened against Georgia Tech? Just take a knee. The game is over with. Don't do something that stupid where you run the football. End the game. They didn't. They lost the game. Stuff like that. He pulled that kind of crap with Oregon as well, and I can't get it out of my head. However, when you compare the talent and look at, like, unit-by-unit rankings, you know, Cam Ward comes in from Washington State, who had an up-and-down career, but there's a lot to like with him if they can get it fixed. The running back, Martinez comes from Oregon State. Outstanding running back. The receivers are awesome. The O-line is really good. They rate like either the best unit across the board in that entire conference at several spots, or they're like number two or number three. So talent-wise, I think there's a clear edge there for Miami. I just have to hope that bozo doesn't blow enough games, you know, to cost me that ticket that I bet on him.
I get it.
You can doubt Cristobal's abilities as a head coach, but you can't doubt his recruiting abilities and the way he poached from that dismantled Pac-12 to really restack his offense. Mitch Moss joining us, of course, host of Follow the Money. Make sure you catch him weekdays, 7 to 10 a.m. Eastern, right here on VSiN. Mitch, you know, it's funny. When you look at the Power Four conferences, you've got the SEC and the Big Ten, and then you've got some space, and then the Big 12 and the ACC. But I want to shift from the ACC to the Big 12 because I am really intrigued by Cam Rising, one of the few college football players out there, or few notable college football players out there, who I think might actually be older than me as he returns for year 7 with Utah. Are you as high on the Utes this year as I am?
Yeah, it's scary how many of us here at the network and beyond are super high on Utah. I look at it several different ways with this team. First of all, they're coming in. They were completely decimated by injuries last year. Anywhere that you read, any recap that you do from last year, people are calling it like the unluckiest year ever for any team with injuries. That's how many they had. It was all across the board. Doesn't matter. They still won a bunch of games because Whittingham is such a good coach. They also are going to come into this league from the best Pac-12 we've ever had in the history of the conference last year. They're going to enter a Big 12 with no Texas and no Oklahoma. They're getting Rising back like you talked about. I think they have playmakers at pretty much every unit across the ball. Whittingham is elite. Home field, as good as it gets. They've won 9-plus games 13 times since 2003. So wow. At the very top, challengers here are K-State for sure. They don't play each other in the regular season. I'm concerned. September 21st, it can get wonky in Stillwater. They could lose that game, and then I don't know exactly how they're going to navigate it because will this conference get two teams in the playoffs? That seems a little dicey to me. But as long as they win the Big 12, which I think they can do it, and I love the talent, I love the coach, and I don't think the league is that good, to be honest. So if they can get by Okie State September 21st, I think that the path is going to be set for this team, and the coast is going to be clear then for them to get in.
Great stuff. Mitch, we appreciate the time. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at Mitch Moss Radio, and tune in to Follow the Money weekdays, 7 to 10 a.m. Eastern, right here on VSiN.
Thanks, guys.
Dustin.
Awesome.
Dustin, you look at that Utah schedule we just put up on the screen here really quick, last 20, 30 seconds or so. I mean, 9.5 over juiced minus $1.45. Those are some lofty numbers, but I see this team going 11-1. Those final 7 games there, that's as easy as it gets in conference.
40-1, by the way, Cam Rising for Heisman. He's 25 years old, still younger than you. That team's always physical. They don't shoot themselves in the foot. As Mitch said, if they have better luck when it comes to health, they're going to be scary in the Big 12.
Yeah, only 11 months younger than me, by the way. We wrap up Sharp Money after this. Don't go anywhere.
Coming back here, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. And if you haven't gone to VSiN.com to place any of your bets for today, you are missing out. Adam Burke breaking down everything in the world of baseball. Josh Applebaum tells you where the sharp money is going so you can be a smarter bettor. And of course, you go to the website right there at the top. Download the College Football Betting Guide out today. Brand spanking new information you can't get anywhere else. Trends from Steve Mackinnon, Adam Burke on how to put together your power ratings, plus best bets from incredibly attractive people, Dustin Sweetelson and Joe Cirillo. All of that and more available to you at VSiN.com. Welcome back to Sharp Money. He's Joe. I'm Dustin. We are both very attractive. It's just my camera has a wider look to his. He has a more like thinly narrow camera. That's the difference here. And a great head of hair.
I spent the big bucks on it, Dustin. I was like, I need a camera that makes me look like I'm 6'4", 185, 5% body fat and a chiseled jawline. And so that was what I invested in when I moved out to LA.
I should acknowledge this because I'm getting a lot of DMs about it. You know, I was gone for 3 weeks, Joe. And I just want to say, I find it offensive, the amount of people in my DMs asking me if I spent my vacation in Turkey to get hair plugs. Like, if I was going to get hair plugs, they would look better than this. That's all I would say.
Would they look better than Joe Buck's? That's the question.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't almost die from them, unfortunately, like him. That's the scariest story of all time. It really makes me not want to get them. But don't you think if I got hair plugs, I would get rid of this giant forehead and start it lower where hair is supposed to start?
I personally think that you're a great looking guy, Dustin. You know, wow, that's they're doing you dirty there. Is this really happening?
My hair is the only thin thing about me.
I mean, it certainly isn't what it was in those pictures you sent me of high school, college, Dustin. I still want to get those on air.
One day.
Sometime in the next 8.5 minutes. You know, it's funny you mentioned my hair, though. I'm very thankful. I have a grandfather down in Florida because, you know, I'm Italian, you're Jewish. What do Italian and Jewish New Yorkers do when they get old? They move to Boynton Beach. So my Italian grandfather married a Jewish woman. They moved to Boynton Beach, naturally. He was told, wasn't asked if he would move. He was told he would move to Boynton Beach. And my grandpa just turned 80. And when I say that this guy still has a beautiful full head of hair, it is so encouraging. Because they say it's your mom's dad is where you get your hair. So my mom's dad is 80. Still has a great head of hair, still walks 3 miles a day, can still do like 20 push-ups. I mean, I think that qualifies him for president, doesn't it, Dustin? In today's world, he's 80 and can do 20 push-ups and walk 3 miles. Doesn't that qualify you for president?
He definitely fits the profile, but does he make sense when he speaks? Because I think if he does, he can't be eligible.
Yeah, that's the thing. He makes too much sense when he speaks. You can actually understand him. I don't know. I think that would work. You know, he was a butcher, so he's good with a knife.
Oh.
I think that right there would help him pull a lot of people in this country.
Well, speaking of knives, a guy who went under the knife and unfortunately won't be back later in the year, we should touch on this briefly, but officially announced, Mike Trout done for the year with the Angels. So gets robbed of another season. He'll be 33 in 6 days. You might be too young for this. But Ken Griffey Jr. is one of the all-time greats. You still look back on the career and wonder, like, what if the injuries just didn't catch up with him? Like, came out of the gate so hot, 20 years old, just electric both in the field at the plate, like the face of a generation of baseball. And it looked like trajectory-wise, the stats would be there. Like, he would challenge all of these elite records. But we are being robbed of really at 32, 33. He should still be in his prime, but he just can't get away from the injuries.
Yeah, and it's too bad. I mean, look, Mike Trout's already solidified his place in Cooperstown.
Sure.
He's going to be a Hall of Famer, no doubt about that. But like Griffey, and you know, look, I'm born in 98. So Griffey's career started in 91. I missed his Seattle time. But I still got to watch plenty of Griff in Cincinnati when he was healthy. That's, of course, where his injuries really kicked in, was his tenure with the Reds. I got to watch enough of Griffey as a kid. I started watching baseball. That was the first sport I started watching as a young kid. Like, I remember games, Dustin, vividly from being like 4 years old. Or I might have been three, and seeing Mo Vaughn hit the Budweiser sign.
Yeah.
At Shea Stadium. Do you remember that specific home run I'm talking about?
I remember being in my brother's room in my original house I grew up in New York, watching it happen on a TV like this big.
I had a TV that big in my bedroom growing up. But yeah, like Mo Vaughn hit the Budweiser sign on that scoreboard in Shea in right center field. That ball was still going up. I think it was projected 514 feet. I believe today's more accurate projections would have had that thing at 550. Like, it was one of the craziest home runs. And I was like 3 or 4 years old at that game in person. Remember it vividly. So I remember enough of Griff. And the biggest thing, to your point that you just made, when I talk about Griffey, is that this is a guy who, I don't know if he would have caught Aaron and Bonds. If he was healthy, though, I think he would have passed Babe Ruth on the all-time home run list. And a Gold Glover, I mean, a five-tool guy. Ken Griffey Jr. deserves more credit when we talk about the all-time greatest players ever.
He would have been in 700, 100%. I mean, at age 30, he hit 40 home runs his first year in Cincinnati, and after that just could not stay on the field. 1 year he had 144 in 07, 143 in 08, but that was, you know, way late in his career where he bounced back. We're talking 70, 53, 83, 128, 109. Like, just never was available, and he just completely broke down.
How many career home runs did that give him that first year in Cincinnati? You said he was how old? 30 years old?
So, let me get the number from there.
I think Baseball Reference, you can like click two rows.
I got it. He had 438 after that first year in Cincinnati.
And you said that was his age 30 season?
That's what I'm saying.
Dude, yeah, he would have passed Ruth. He might have passed Aaron and Bonds. Like, he would have definitely passed Ruth on the all-time home run list. So it is a shame we were robbed of that.
Let's see, 438. Let's do the rest of his career because I can't do math that well, but it's like under 200. So the rest of his career, all the things not popping up for me.
How many do you have total?
630 minus 438. Oh, I got to carry numbers.
192.
192. No, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, 190. Yeah, and that's in the entirety of his 30s. That's sad.
That's crazy. And Mike Trout's not that different. That's the point here. The point is Mike Trout came up like 20 years old, set the world on fire, was literally on the same path. And now he's going to be 33 days and he's missing another season. Like, let's see, it's 2024.
What's his contract looking like? I'm going to look up his contract
really
quick.
Dude, he hasn't played 150 games since 2016.
Since the year 160. When Babe Ruth or Home Run Baker led the league with 13 rounds.
We're talking 134 in 2019. Like, man.
And Mike Trout is signed through 2030, which will be his age 38 season. Do you think there is any chance here? He's got 6 years left after this season. Do you think there is any chance that the Angels do the right thing and cut him loose and give him a chance to go to a contender? Do you think there is any chance that teams want him given his injury history? Like, do you see him just riding out a sad career with the Angels at this point?
So here's the problem. I think the Angels would do the right thing. I think that, but unfortunately, the right thing is what Mike Trout wants. And it feels like he wants to stay there. Like, he's happy. Maybe he gets frustrated at this point, but it does feel like maybe a shift to DH or first base would keep him on the field, right?
He's a good fielder, though.
I know, but like, you got to protect him from himself. He definitely shouldn't be in center field anymore, but I would move him to DH or first base. Like, take all of that away. Don't let him injure his legs. Just rely on that power bat to do its thing and finish your career on a contender. But I can't want something for someone that they don't want. And I actually, if he wants to just be an Angel and waste away there and that's what he wants for his career, that's perfectly fine.
I mean, if he's healthy, I'll take it because I got a chance to go see him and watch him play for cheap.
Sure.
But the thing is, whenever I go to an Angels game, he's not in the lineup.
Yeah, that's the problem.
That's the problem,
That's the problem.
Man, you look at this guy's career. You know what I think actually might be one of the things that jumps off the page first at me? His stolen base to caught stealing ratio. 212 to 38. I mean, that's an insane, what is that, 212 divided by 250? Guy's 85% stolen base success rate.
Yeah, that is that. I mean,
and
he was
a 40 home run guy.
But we're talking at age 27, he had 285 home runs. He's at 378 now.
Like, that means he hasn't even hit 100 in the last five. Wait, really?
Yeah. 285 up until 2019. That is just
93 in the last five calendar years combined.
Just absolutely soul crushing to watch this happen to an all-time great.
Well, in the last five calendar years, Dustin, he's played 319 games. That's less than two full seasons in the last five calendar years. That's sad. Hey, this was a fun week, man. I'm not back with you tomorrow, so 4 days this week. This was a lot of fun, man.
Great job.
Let's do it again sometime. For Dustin Sweetelson, I'm Joe Cirillo. Don't go anywhere, though, guys. Sharp Money might be done, but VEASAN Primetime up next.